Dow Jones Industrial Average standing at 20,453. The S&P 500 standing at 2328. Now, the closing high on the S&P 500 is 2395. So 2328 represents a 2.75% depreciation off the all-time closing high, 2.75% pullback from that all-time closing high represented in the current level of the S&P 500. One of the most fascinating things going on out there, and I'm sure some of you are aware of it, is the federal budget debt clock, which is now ringing very, very close to the $20 trillion number. I suppose you'll see some headlines when we actually get to $20 trillion. We're very, very close at this point, and we're certainly going to get there in a fairly short period of time, especially given the fact that our annual deficits, which get added onto the national debt, continue to pile up. Now, we had a very, very large increase in the annual deficit in the fiscal year ending September of last year. The federal government is on a September fiscal year. And the budget deficit soared in the latest complete fiscal year by 35%, all the way up to $588 billion. That gets added onto the national debt, which is very close now to the $20 trillion level. It's in the $19.9 trillion ballpark. And, of course, now we're running another very large deficit in the current fiscal year, which runs through September of 2017. It looks like we're going to run up an additional annual deficit this year in excess of half. This is unbelievable. In excess of $500 billion. And that will, of course, push the deficit way beyond the $20 trillion level by the end of this fiscal year. And it just keeps going and going. About the only people in Washington that are standing up to this issue would be a group of congressional members in the House of Representatives. They call themselves the Freedom Caucus. And the Freedom Caucus is a group of roughly three dozen or so members of Congress who take the position that enough is enough on running up the national debt, and that the country should rein in its annual deficits and get things on a more appropriate basis in terms of revenue versus outgo. But other than that group of roughly three dozen members of Congress, and again, they call themselves the Freedom Caucus, that's who they are, they're the only group really standing up for anything resembling fiscal responsibility. And it's interesting because we have a date coming up very, very soon. That date is April 28th. And on April 28th, the current temporary spending authority under which the federal government operates will expire. So what does that mean? What does this April 28th mean? It means that if they fail to extend government funding past April 28th, we could be looking at a quote-unquote government shutdown. Now, we all know in a government shutdown that a lot of things related to government go on, continue to go on, but at the same time, it's a very inappropriate way to run the shop because it's very costly. It costs additional money to operate under the government shutdown. Now, the fact is that it's generally expected that a funding bill will be passed by April 28th. So the only reason I'm mentioning this is it's a very short period of time from right now. It's 12 days from right now. And the other reason I mentioned it is Congress is currently on a two-week recess. And so they're not even coming back till the 24th of April. So really, although it's the 16th, it doesn't matter because members of Congress are vacationing or whatever they're doing, but they're not working in Washington. And as a consequence, coming back on the 24th, they're going to be looking just 4 days later on the 28th at the expiration of the current temporary spending authority. So we'll be keeping an eye on this, but as of right now, it's generally expected that they will pass a funding bill by the 28th. We shall see. Should be interesting to see whether that actually happens. Bottom line on all of this is the budget deficit over the last 12 months is $653 billion. That's 3.5% of GDP, which is higher than almost anybody thinks it should be in terms of a percentage of gross domestic product. It's the largest percentage of GDP right now since the end of 2013. So we're going backwards now. In terms of fiscal irresponsibility, we're going forwards. In terms of In terms of fiscal responsibility, we're going backwards. Now, the Office of Management and Budget is projecting a deficit for the fiscal year ending September of about $600 billion. So that would anticipate that some tax revenues will come in between now and September that will take it down from the current $653 billion 12-month average down to about $600 billion if OMB is correct in their projection. But even that number would be larger than last year's $588 billion, which was 35% higher than the prior fiscal year. Now, obviously, this does not include, and this is very important, this projection of a $600 billion deficit this year does not include an infrastructure spending program. It does not include tax cuts. It does not include increases in defense spending, which may become very important depending on what happens with North Korea. So you should note that although the Office of Management and Budget is talking about a $600 billion deficit this year, you have to factor in the possibility if there's infrastructure spending. So far, we have not seen that. If there are tax cuts, so far, we have seen none. If there are increases in defense spending, and so far, we don't really know about that, except that there are some hot spots, especially potentially North Korea, that could certainly have an effect on defense spending. So we'll see how all of that plays out. And unfortunately, the old Chinese saying, may you live in interesting times, is very much alive and well in the United States right now with all that's going on. As far as I'm concerned, what we have right now is a situation where we're looking at April 28th, and we're looking to see whether a funding bill is passed to extend spending authority to the federal government. It's expected to expire on the 28th unless extended. Congress returning on the 24th, and the House certainly has the power to get the process started to get a funding bill passed by that date. But there are some sticky wickets in this issue that could come to the fore. We shall see. We've seen it happen before. We've seen it all before. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Well, we did get word this week that producer prices were down a bit in the latest month measured period. The producer price index down 0.1% for the month of March. Now, that's the first time that we have seen the producer price index decline in a period of 7 months, and the consensus was calling for an unchanged reading on the producer price index. A big factor was a 4.1% decline in loan services during the month. That reflects the fact that loan demand has been tapering off in recent months, which is kind of interesting because that's certainly an indication that we are not seeing any acceleration in economic growth. None whatsoever here in this first quarter. In fact, the first quarter will be reported at the end of the month. In fact, everything we're seeing right now is pointing to a slow or very slow first quarter growth rate in the U.S. economy. Also, energy prices were down almost 3% in the month of March. Gasoline took a drop. Food prices picked up 0.9% for the month. So all in all, when you throw all of the wholesale prices together, you get a decline of just 0.1%, which certainly is not something that should worry you. If you would rather see low inflation, you certainly want to see low wholesale price activity. Now, we also look at the core producer price index, and that excludes the food and the energy. That was flat, no change at all, although the consensus expected a 0.2% advance. Didn't happen. It was even. So that's where we are on wholesale prices for the month of March. Year over year, it's a different story. The producer price index is up 2.3% on a year-over-year basis, even with the 0.1% decline in March. And that's the fastest producer price index increase in 5 years, all the way back to March of 2012. And when you look at the core wholesale prices, they were up 1.6% year-over-year, and that certainly suggests that inflation pressures remain contained at this point. So that's what's going on with inflation. We also had a consumer price index report this week that indicated that consumer prices in the month of March declined. Once again, not the sort of thing that's going to make you lose sleep over the issue of inflation, to actually see a decline in the consumer price index in the month of March, but that is what we saw last month. Consumer sentiment continues to be strong, and this has been a fascinating dichotomy or disconnect, if you will, between the economy that we're seeing and things like consumer sentiment. Consumer sentiment's been strong, even though the economy looks really weak in the first quarter. And we're going to get a report on that first quarter later this month, but there is nothing happening right now that would suggest growth acceleration in the first quarter. Remember now, last year we had real GDP growth year over year right in that 2% area, which is where it has been on average for the most part for several years. Now we've had people come forth in the last few months and talk about an acceleration in economic growth. They've talked about real GDP of 4%, 5%, and these numbers that have been thrown out. But in the real world, we have not seen that. We're waiting to see that. It has not happened. Meanwhile, though, consumer sentiment has remained quite firm. The University of Michigan Wolverine Consumer Sentiment Survey, which is taken along with Reuters, rose another point in the preliminary April survey to 98. And on a six-month average basis, we are looking at the highest Michigan Wolverine Consumer Sentiment Index reading in 16 years, all the way back to March of 2001. So consumers are upbeat about the economy, and we're waiting to see any of that or some of that translate into economic activity. We have not yet seen that. So we'll continue to watch closely to see whether that happens. In terms of inflation expectations, the consumer outlook for inflation expectations over the next year is 2.5%. And the five-year outlook is 2.4%. So that's something that really has happened, where you could say consumer expectations have really been whittled down. By the way, we also noted this week the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index was up to 51. That is the sixth gain in 7 weeks and the second highest level since the summer of 2001, believe it or not. consumer comfort at a 15.5-year high. Waiting for all of this to translate into economic activity. So far, it's been crickets.